Hey, it's Mae Whitman, and I play Frankie in the new Realm podcast, The Sisters. The Sisters is about a museum curator of medical oddities who investigates the origins of a mutated skeleton with two layers of bones. Soon, she uncovers an extraordinary mystery that connects her present with one family's tragic past in hauntingly dangerous ways. Listen to The Sisters wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody, welcome to the Dungeon Cast. I'm Brian.
I'm special guest Jake.
This is the podcast where we talk about everything Dungeons & Dragons, from dubious devils to dangerous dragons, and today we are talking about the Dungeon Master's Guide.
Hey.
Prepare yourselves.
I cast Fireball.
Hey, Jake.
What's going on, Brian?
I want to talk about the Dungeon Master's Guide. I feel like it's a book that everybody knows about and almost, I don't want to say nobody reads, but a lot of people don't read it.
I definitely don't, but I'm also, a little fast and loose with my DMing for as like rule-oriented of a mind as I am. I don't really use it.
Yeah, it's a funny thing about D&D because they tell you up front you do not need rules to necessarily play this type of game, but we like the rules that there's lots of systems, lots of RPG systems, but we use D&D 5e for a reason because we like the things that it brings to the table in terms of like how to manage a player doing a thing in a game and what the consequences and physics involved should be.
Yeah.
And it assigns statistics and like you kind of couple that with the role-playing aspect to figure out what your characters are good and not good at. So the role of the Dungeon Master is to arbiter all these rules. So it's good to know the rules of the game.
Yeah.
A Dungeon Master that doesn't kind of know the basics at least is you're going to run into trouble. You're going to run into hiccups. Like you should probably do some reading before you jump into this for the first time. Like, let's say you have a group of five friends. One of them agrees to be the Dungeon Master. Nobody has experience. That can be a recipe for confusion.
Yeah, definitely.
And long games where you are spending lots of your precious playtime
like
sifting
stuff
through
up.
Information.
Yeah.
Especially if you didn't prep beforehand, if you're just sitting down, like, I have kind of an idea. Like, let's just do it. You don't have the starter kit. You don't have anything. You don't have materials. Like, it's kind of a rough situation. So you are the driving force that powers your game. It's a big responsibility, but it's by no means an impossible one.
Yeah.
As we both know. Jake and I have a similar amount of experience playing the game. And I think I probably have a little more DMing experience at this point. Just based off of like how many
sheer amount of games you've ran.
How many irons I have in the fire all the time too.
Definitely.
With doing the show and like I think a lot of the stuff on our Patreon is actual play stuff, and I'm in charge of a lot of that DMing stuff because Will's busy writing notes and writing an actual play game for us.
Yeah.
So me and Jake first started learning underneath Will, and he was our first example of a Dungeon Master. So since then, we've seen a lot of other Dungeon Masters come to play. My next Dungeon Master after Will... No, maybe it was before, but around the same time I started playing at Will's table, I started listening to The Adventure Zone, which is their first campaign, is very good.
Yeah.
It's fun, fast, and loose. They don't really get the rules. They don't really put a lot of emphasis on the rules because they're more interested in telling a fun story.
Yeah.
And like having
more about the goofs, more about...
Especially at first, they were really about like, you know, the improv comedy part, which D&D is great at. I mean, you have a lot of fun just laughing at dumb shit that happens in this game.
Yeah.
And that's okay. Like if you want to, like being a DM is a very stylistic thing.
Yeah.
The DMG helps you with the finer points of certain things to feel cohesive and to help you like do interesting things.
Facilitate that a little bit.
Brings certain ideas that you have into Dungeons & Dragons. So help you facilitate. So there are like, this is not just a great book to read, but it's a great book to just open up and have on hand and spot check.
Yeah.
Hey, I want to put grenades in the game. Well, where do you find that? the DMG has stats for that because it's like, I feel like the DMG is just full of like kind of like common idea things. Mm-hmm. Let's solidify into D&D rules, right?
Yeah, I was going to say, I think mostly what I've used it for is like if I wanted to introduce like a set of magical items that I hadn't really homebrewed and I needed to gift my players some cool magic items, some like cool starter ones, I looked in that because I was like, I don't want to whip out completely unbalanced items that would break my campaign. And it kind of has like a section for that. It's like, oh, you know, low level, rare to, you know, uncommon kind of items for your starter party. And that's kind of how I used it.
Yes. Yeah, super, super solid stuff. I mean, like that, it's literally meant to guide you through like these types of things. Like, I want to do this. This is a great reference for that.
Mm-hmm.
So for people that don't know, like typically you're going to be running an adventure in D&D, and typically an adventure consists of completing like a specific quest. It can take as long or as short as you want. You can do one shots. So like for people that don't know, a one shot is just a single game. You sit down. Typically these games take anywhere from, I want to say like three is probably.
Probably, you could probably do it in end,
two,
yeah,
but
yeah.
That's, I don't know what you're getting done in two.
Yeah.
Some things,
it would have to be
time
like super
strange
short.
In D&D.
Yeah, that's true.
Things that take a minute, like a combat.
Might take
1 minute of combat
an hour
probably.
It's true.
You know, 10 rounds, combat's broken up into six second turns.
Mm-hmm.
You know, an hour for 1 minute trade. Mm-hmm. Like it's a little wonky, right? But it's fun. We like doing that. But that's just one piece of the puzzle, right? Like you can do one shots or you can do long form campaign, which I think most people are probably more used to.
Mm-hmm.
But I see a lot of like a healthy blend for people that play the game a lot. Like for people that are in our Discord talking, it seems like they have a long form game going in some capacity that they're involved in, and then they're jumping into one shots here and there.
Yeah,
and that's kind of where I think we landed as well. We do like we had a couple long form things going. We're obviously playing Super Quest Saga right now, and that'll be done toward the end of the year, apparently. We're being told. We'll see. But we've been playing that game for a couple of years now.
It's true.
It's the longest game I've ever sat through. It's probably the first game I'm ever going to finish.
Yeah.
So we've started a lot of things, and we've finished a lot of games, but they're more one-shot-esque.
Yeah.
Or like they turn into like five games or something like that. But really, it's just a short campaign. Mm. So your experience with a dungeon master beyond Will probably was crit roll first, right?
Definitely.
The infamous Matt Mercer.
Mr. Mercer.
Much less infamous than he is, like the flagship of Dungeon Masters.
Yeah.
Like he's definitely the leader of the pack out there
in
the actual play world, the live play stuff.
Mm-hmm.
If you haven't heard of Critical Role and you play a lot of Dungeons and Dragons, you're just not paying attention.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yes.
And
it's everywhere.
It's great. It's great for the game to have something like that out there. And
yes.
have so many fans and stuff. So how do you feel about Matt Mercer as a dungeon master?
I mean, he's great. Like I think he incorporates a lot of like homebrew stuff, or making, cause it is very vanilla, the campaigns that they end up doing. Like it's very like rule oriented. It's very like, I mean, they keep a track of all of their spell components. Like they have to go and shop for that kind of thing. There's definitely, he goes down to like every single detail about.
Do they play encumbrance?
I don't think encumbrance, but they like, you know,
they have bags of holding.
They have bags of holding. They have like attunements, and it's all rule based, so like you can't have more than like two attuned to you, like that kind of thing. They're definitely, like I said, very vanilla. But then
the rules of attunement are really interesting, and I had to read them recently because of something that came up in a game.
Oh.
But yeah, they're actually pretty. They're more in depth than I thought they were. They're like, it's pretty specific set of rules.
A lot of it. And then I think where he shines is he gets like these homebrew monsters where like you think it's going to be one thing, you run into the thing. And if you have experienced players that like the crew on Crit Roll, it's not like they are, or the cast, it's not like they metagame super hard. So it's like they look at a thing and they're like, okay, I know what that is. And they don't let that affect their gameplay or anything like that. But the cool thing about Mercer is that you look at the thing and you think you know what it is, and then it's like totally not that. And you
throws
that loop in, like it has like an additional thing in the stat block, or like, you know, it's fey instead of demonic.
Nice.
And now
okay.
like now the table is now switched. And I think he does a like, great job of that. Like, especially this last campaign was all very
a kind of
cool shit.
Because if you're an experienced Dungeons & Dragons player and you've seen a lot of the stuff the game has to offer,
yeah.
like there's a lot of reoccurring themes. Mm-hmm. A lot of players know what the deck of many things is yeah. and how the cards work potentially. And so when you see the deck of many things in game,
yeah.
you don't know what that is. Yeah. You're not supposed to know typically what that is unless like you've heard of it. Like,
mm-hmm.
you know, this is all case by case. But staying in character is the right thing to do,
mm-hmm.
obviously. That's like a keystone of being a player, and not to metagame, which is to like act outside of that.
Yeah.
But knowing in the meta sense what's going on is going to affect you maybe in subconscious ways that you are not able to subvert.
Yeah.
So that's a great thing that Mercer does mm-hmm. to kind of tilt the scales back away from
yeah.
that.
Add like a freshness to it, because like you
that
said,
too.
if they're all experienced, like if they see a dragon, they're expecting a dragon to act like a dragon, and then he just throws that curveball at you, and like, oh shit, like I was expecting to be like this, but it was totally not, and it's very cool.
So that's the kind of assertion you can put on your game.
Yeah,
you know, you can change things to fit your setting and your world however you want.
Yeah.
So stylistically, you can do a lot of things to like change and make things easier for you, easier for your players,
mm-hmm.
switch things up. Maybe your red dragon is a little different mm-hmm. than the typical red dragon. Maybe they have different motivations, or maybe they're more of a neutral creature than an evil creature to yeah. kind of really play things up. So when you're playing with more experienced players, you can get that feel. That is really cool. I do like hearing about crit roll. It was yeah. a little difficult for me to listen to because of the nitty gritty things.
That's fair.
Going yeah. from the adventure zone to something like that
yeah.
is like, the adventure zone's not fucking around with any of that stuff.
Yeah.
Like encumbrance, I don't think anybody really likes to play with that.
Probably
not. I don't. If you like encumbrance, let me know in the comments. I'd be interested to see like how your game is going,
yeah.
and if you're a happy person, because it makes me unhappy to like.
It
have
is.
To, I'm so used to, you know, I'm spoiled by video games.
Yeah.
Where my inventory is a bajillion years long, and I'm not punished for it.
Yes.
Pokemon is like the main culprit of that.
Yeah.
Where my bag can hold everything forever.
I was thinking the second you brought encumbrance up, I was thinking of Skyrim, because you have a weight limit based upon your stamina. And then if you go over that, you walk everywhere. You can't sprint. You can't teleport. You can't do shit. And then you just have to like dump a whole bunch of stuff out of here, because, you know, you got fucking 47
yeah.
dragon bones in your bag for no reason. So yes, playing with encumbrance is tough. Like, I don't know if I would ever, put
it's
that
a lot
into
to keep
a game.
Track of
that also. Yeah.
It's realistic. The realism of it is great. Like
yeah.
I don't know the specific rules of encumbrance. I just know it fucks you up.
Yes.
So, because yeah. I've never played with it. But that's something you could do. I mean, like...
Yeah, by all means.
It's just, like, the players I'm used to and introducing new players to the game, it's overwhelming. That's an overwhelming thing.
Yeah.
Spell components, too, that, like, borders the overwhelming.
Yeah.
There's a lot of things you can do that aren't just hand wave them.
Mm-hmm.
I like the idea of making my players go get the spell components and, like, learn the spell and, like, have some kind of thing prepped for why
mm-hmm.
they know it,
mm-hmm.
why this one, where did it come from, and then getting the components and then forgetting about it.
Yeah,
like, you know where to get
like
these components and cast spells. So like, if we really want to get into the survival bit of this,
mm-hmm.
then we can start talking about it once we start going on like that leg of the journey.
I think also that's a good thing to do, like, prior to the campaign, like discuss expectations, like, hey,
yes.
like, what kind of game are you guys wanting? Because especially if they're new, they're not really gonna know. Like, that's what happened with my game that I'm running. Like, I have two brand new players. I'm a brand new DM, so I'm kind of letting them have a, like, not exactly free reign, but, you know, if they want to do something like that might take, you know, two actions, you know, like if they want to run up a fucking tree and then do a backflip and then do their attack, like, I'll still have them do an acrobatic roll, like, in order to do that. But, you know, maybe other DMs would be like, oh, you know, you could maybe only do one of those things, like run up the tree next turn, then you can jump off and do your attack kind of thing.
Yes. Limitations is like a very critical thing as a dungeon master
yeah.
to set as well.
Yeah, because I also don't want them just to, you know, do seven different attacks. So obviously I have limits, but, You know, it's all about those expectations. Like, I sat them down, I talked to them, like, hey, you know, like, this is the kind of game I'm thinking of running, you know, mm-hmm. probably will be combat heavy just because me as a person, like, I think it's more fun that way. Like, I kind of run D&D like a video game almost. Like,
yeah.
They're going to run into random encounters a lot just because it's a world.
Yeah, like
it's
your a basic RPG. World.
Yeah, basic RPG. That's exactly how I'm running it. And they seem to like it. They like to feel that strength, and I gave them a whole bunch of magical items right from the get-go just to have them feel that power.
Yeah.
And also because they're new, you know, they might not be very comfortable with the roleplay aspect. So I don't force them to talk about stuff. I'll throw it to them. I'll be like, hey, you know, like this person said this. Like, what do you want to say back to them? And if they are, you know, are kind of like, oh, you know, blah, 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 like, or maybe say what they're going to do in like a third person kind of way. Like, oh yeah, like my character would probably like think this, you know, like I'll help them. I'll kind of hold their hand with it.
That's all excellent stuff. Cause you're going to have, you have these aspects of D&D, and the DMG talks about this, is you have these aspects of D&D, but not everybody's strong in these, in these sections. Like improv as a DM is crucial to know. Mm-hmm. But a lot of people really struggle with being put on the spot like that.
It's true.
And I think it, like, this is just me personally speaking, that this ties into like a public speaking sort of thing, like sitting in front of your peers and doing this publicly, especially something creative, something you worked hard on, and you're, by running it, by putting it in front of your players, no matter who you're putting it in front of, whether that person is cool or not, you're opening yourself up to critique.
Definitely.
And that is a difficult place to be for a lot of people. It's hard to get past that. Mm-hmm. But the best thing you can do is, first and foremost, focus on having fun.
Yeah.
And good communication is a cornerstone of having fun in D&D.
Yeah.
I think talking to your players regularly in and outside of the game is definitely good. So just know, as a dungeon master taking up that mantle, you're going to have to work on this game while not at the table playing with players.
Yeah.
Probably for at minimum as long as you spend playing the game, you're probably going to be prepping the game.
Yeah.
I have at least a couple days of prep for something important. At least.
Yeah.
Like, and by a couple days, I mean, like, I have a 9 to 5, so I'm going to go do that. And then I'm going to come home and take care of my responsibilities at home. Mm. And then in my free time, I'm going to, like, prep.
Couple hours
so
here, couple I would hours say there.
A minimum, like, 6 hours you probably need to put into something, like, important. Like, if you're going to run a combat, if you're going to have NPC building or a town, that could take longer.
Tough
a
one.
Dungeon that you're creating yourself could take longer.
Yeah.
So just know that by taking up this mantle, you're not just putting your work out to critique. You're signing up for a lot to do as well.
Yeah.
But it's so, it's very rewarding at the same time.
Yeah.
To like, if this is your thing, if you want to like weave a story and build a world, that's cool. If you want to pick up a module that has a lot of those things kind of put aside for you already, you just have some reading to do and then know the rules and
jump
like
in.
how to jump in and do that. For this part of the episode, we looked up a section of the DMG that I think neither of us are really familiar with. I'm reading this book right now and like trying to implement it into my own game. There's a lot of useful stuff in here.
Yeah.
Highly recommended for all Dungeon Masters running 5e to read the Dungeon Master's Guide in some capacity.
Yeah.
And we were kind of looking through here, like, we've never really built a dungeon from scratch like this.
Yeah, not at all.
I've built dungeons.
Yeah.
But and I've run the dungeon out of a module, which was the funnest part of doing the module, was running the dungeon in it.
It was
that was
good.
Cool.
Yeah.
You know, all the traps are already written there for you. That was like the best part.
Yeah.
So, but what if you're going to run your own dungeon, right? Mm-hmm. So the DMG says, some dungeons are old strongholds abandoned by the folk who built them. Others are natural caves or weird lairs carved out by foul monsters, which we've talked about extensively on the show.
Mm-hmm.
They attract evil cults, monster tribes, and reclusive creatures and adventurers. Dungeons are also home to ancient treasures, coins, gems, magic items, and other valuables hidden away in the darkness, often guarded by traps or jealousy kept by the monsters that have collected them.
Mm-hmm.
So it says, when you set out to create a dungeon, think about its distinctive qualities. For example, a dungeon that serves as a hobgoblin stronghold has a different quality from an ancient temple inhabited by Yuan-Ti. This section lays out a process for creating a dungeon and bringing it to life. So those are all things to think about as a dungeon master.
Mm-hmm.
The who, what, when, where, and why, that whole bit is going to be very useful, it seems like, for this. Yeah. So if you're a journalist, then you're going to be right at home building a dungeon, I think.
Yeah.
But conceptually speaking, there's a lot of things in the DMG that can help you do that, like these random
charts,
these tables. Yeah. You can roll on a table like to randomly generate a dungeon. So let's do it, man. Let's build a dungeon right now.
Hell yeah.
So we're going to do the dungeon location. You're going to need a D100. So go ahead and roll it, and I'll tell you where our dungeon's going to be.
41.
So 41 is going to put us in a desert.
Ooh, that's dope.
There's also exotic locations. Just roll a D20 for me, and I'll tell you where we landed. We can decide if we want to use that instead.
10.
10 is in a meteorite.
Oh, so that's
why don't we do both? Why don't we do in a desert in a meteorite?
That'd be
so
sick.
Our dungeon is going to be in the desert.
Yes.
Inside of a meteorite.
Very dope.
So this thing crashed to our planet. Let's just do Faerun.
Sure.
I know the Faerun map because I run a Waterdeep game called FBATS in our Patreon. Mm-hmm. So the Anorak Desert, that's a thing. A meteorite fell there and it's a hollowed out, like it's been hollowed out probably. I don't know. Let's see who creates the dungeon.
Yeah.
That's the next section. So a dungeon reflects its creators. A lost temple of the Yuan-T, choked by overgrown plants, might feature ramps instead of stairs. It's just stuff like that, you know, like really put the flavor on it. So let's figure out who the dungeon creator is and roll a D20.
18.
18 is the Mind Flayers.
Oh, shit.
So let's, I think that suggests, since maybe they are like, Underdark creatures.
I was going to say, maybe the meteorite crashed all the way through to the Underdark. Yeah.
Let's say this is a big meteorite somehow didn't wipe out everything. Maybe, I know in Anorak, there were like flying cities that fell to the ground. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's something like that. Somebody, some fucking wizard was fucking around and like brought this thing down, as like Madara style. Mm-hmm, and half of it sticking up out of the ground, or maybe just the top portion. Mm-hmm. And most of it is underneath like an iceberg in the Underdark, and it has been inhabited by Mind Flayers. So this dungeon has been created by Mind Flayers.
Very dope.
Which have a slew of just like weapons at their disposal in terms of like creatures.
This is a scary dungeon.
Fear of the Beholder, the Mind Witness, is a beholder that has been infected by Mind Flayers and is now their servant.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Retention.
Ooh, look at you.
Selling a little or a lot. Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify is great. They're taking businesses of all sizes, cradling them in their arms, to help them grow by giving them the tools they need. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S., and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success at every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/dungeoncast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/dungeoncast now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/dungeoncast. Hey folks, I'm here today to tell you about Visible. Something unfortunate about wireless services, what you see isn't always what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. No perception check required. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. If you're looking for a carrier that is upfront with no hidden fees, then go to Visible.com to make the switch. You don't need more than one line of wireless to save, and you're going to be getting unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Visible is the wireless carrier that's constantly operating from a zone of truth. In their quest for total transparency, Visible wants you to know the monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com.
So cults and religious groups. So let's go ahead and roll a d20 there. So maybe they're
four.
They're cult. So they're going to be an air elemental cult.
Interesting. Okay. Okay.
I mean, if we're just going by the table here, yeah. I mean, we can go with just mind flaying as the creators. We could say that there is also an air elemental cult. Maybe the top layer is an air elemental cult. And the bottom layer is mind flayers.
The further you go in, it just starts.
Yeah. Maybe let's do that. Yeah, I like that. Like
start encountering more underdark shit.
The caverns up top, like, have a lot of air circulating with them. So maybe the air elementals have gathered there. Yeah. There's a cult.
Yeah.
Okay. So there's an air elemental cult. NPC alignment. So let's roll an alignment for the cult, probably.
10.
10 is going to be neutral. So there's a neutral air elemental cult up in here.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to say the mind flayers are evil because they're evil as fuck.
Yes.
We'll just keep that. It would be weird to have like lawful neutral. Good mind flayers.
Yeah, that's true.
Although we've seen them in Super Quest Saga, which I don't even think is really spoilers in this context. NPC class. So I think this is more if you're just like building NPCs. Okay, yeah, so let's roll it anyway. Let's roll a D20 again.
Four again.
So we've got clerics. Let's call them air elemental clerics.
That's dope. That's interesting. Okay.
Yeah. I don't know what that's all about.
Like maybe the top of the meteorite is like their temple because it's close to the sky or something. Nice. Or gets them high up to the sky.
I love all this.
Yeah.
So the dungeon's purpose. So except in the case of a natural cavern, a dungeon is crafted and inhabited for a specific purpose.
Mm-hmm.
So we've kind of talked about it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
That influences its design and features. You can choose a purpose from the dungeon's purpose table, roll one at random, and use your own ideas. So we kind of have set a purpose. Let's roll and see what we get and then try to apply it.
Nine.
A nine is a mine. So I think this suits the lower part of the...
It's very true.
Yeah. So maybe the mind flayers have found something in this meteorite that is valuable.
Some otherworldly shit. Yeah. Yeah.
And that's why it's a dungeon. That's tunneling to find this shit.
Yeah.
Nice. Okay. That's been pretty cool. So dungeon purpose. So on a mine. Oh, it has sections that you can read for each. So like if we rolled a one, it was death trap. The dungeon is built to eliminate any creature that dares to enter it. But we did not roll that. We rolled the mine. An abandoned mine can quickly become infested with monsters, while miners who delve too deep can break through into the Underdark. Maybe
that's what happened.
Maybe they were mining from the top and the bottom. Yeah, oh no! Yeah.
And then they found mine flayers. Yeah, maybe, like, oh shit.
Maybe this is an old mine. Yes. It's already been mined, and mine flayers killed all the miners or whatever.
And then moved in. Yeah,
they moved in. Could be.
That's dope.
History, which see, it's like as you roll.
We're just adding on to this mythos already.
Yeah, we're taking these things and running. Yeah. So there are people out there that need the table. They need to do this type of thing. They pick from here. They don't kind of like build as they go the kind of way we're doing now.
Mm-hmm.
And that's totally okay.
Yeah,
like you guys totally. Can do whatever works for you to help you get your shit right. Do it.
Yeah.
We're just this way.
Yeah, I feel like this is like a good way to just get your creative juices like flowing. Like it gives you the circumstance. And then we are the ones that are... filling in the gap.
We're only partway through. Yeah. I love this place already.
This is dope. Yeah, this is very cool.
So in most cases, the original architecture of a dungeon are long gone, and the question of what happened to them can help shape the dungeon's current state.
Interesting.
The dungeon history table notes key events that can transform a site from its original purpose into a dungeon for adventurers to explore. Particularly, old dungeons can have a history that consists of multiple events, each of which transformed the site in some way. So let's roll a d20, and we'll add a historical event to the dungeon.
Nine again.
Nine is creators destroyed by attacking raiders. Okay.
Interesting.
So maybe these miners went to escape or like do another plan. Like, we can't go into the bottom anymore.
Yeah.
A bunch of people got mind flared up.
Yes.
And they're camping outside. And a bunch of raiders come in and kill the rest of them.
Yeah,
anybody, all the original creators of this dungeon are dead.
Yeah.
Okay.
Especially if it was like a mine to begin with, and then they stumbled upon the mine flayers kind of thing. Like that would make
an after the fact sort of thing.
Yeah.
So we dungeon inhabitants, we've got that. Dungeon factions, we've got that. Yeah, we've already done it. But there are a few paragraphs on each of that that I think we are okay to skip right now.
Sure.
But we're getting towards the end. So we actually haven't, like, we know who's in the dungeon.
Yes.
And what is in the dungeon in a lot of ways and what has happened in the history of the dungeon.
And I feel like that would help inform like what to fill the dungeon with. Like,
yeah,
you know, mind flayer stuff, like, you know, there's
we've already got a bunch of stat blocks. Exactly. We could put air elementals in here.
Yeah.
We could put like cool wind traps.
That's true. Yeah.
Psychic stuff. What important resources in here? I think this section, dungeon ecology, might give us a little insight, right?
Yeah.
An inhabited dungeon has its own ecosystem. So the creatures that live there need to eat, drink, breathe, and sleep, just as creatures in the wilderness do. Predators need to be able to seek prey and intelligent creatures. So this suggests that there's not just these two factions in this dungeon, but also like
more
natural creatures that might. So like fill your dungeon up, like some of these rooms. We're going to do like levels and rooms. This dungeon sounds like it's going to have lots of different levels and tunnel systems.
Yes.
Lots of inhabitants could be here.
I mean, especially if it's connected to the Underdark, just any sort of unpleasantness could have moved from there into the mines and filled the dungeon.
It's also encounter difficulty is something to work with here.
That's true.
It's really based on your players and the CRs of monsters.
Yeah.
It teams up pretty nicely. One of my big rule of thumbs is to never run a monster that has an attack power capable of one-shotting a player. Because I did that and killed a guy, and it was true. Very like it was that shouldn't have happened.
It was a bad time.
Yeah, it was a bad time. nobody was happy about it. We're like, that probably shouldn't have happened.
Yeah.
Whoops.
Retcon.
retcon. So sorry, Freeland.
Yeah.
You might be inclined to increase the encounter difficulty as the adventurers descend deeper into the dungeon as a way to keep the dungeon challenging as the characters gain levels. Or to ratchet up the tension. However, this approach can turn the dungeon into a grind. A better approach is to include encounters of varying difficulty throughout. The contrast between easy and hard encounters, as well as simple and complex encounters, encourages characters to vary their tactics and keep the encounters from seeming too similar, which is very good advice.
Yeah, yeah.
So let's talk about mapping a dungeon. Every dungeon needs a map showing its layout. The dungeon's location, creator, purpose, history, and inhabitants should give you a starting point for designing your dungeon map. If you need further inspiration, you can find maps that have been made freely available to use on the internet, or even use a map of the real world location.
Mm-hmm.
Alternatively, you can borrow a map from a published adventurer, or randomly generate a dungeon complex using the tables presented in Appendix A. Was this Appendix A?
It might be after.
No. Yeah, it might be after. So,
or maybe not.
Appendix A. No, I don't think so. I think we were in it.
Appendix A is in the back, actually.
Might be in the back. We're not going to go there now.
Yeah, yeah. That's
fine. Because there's no way to, like, we don't have, like, a way to show the audience. Yeah. We're not prepared to do that. But the next, that's pretty much what you're going to do next is now that you know what's in this place, sort of the past conflict, it's up to you to populate it. You know, go for desert creatures, like maybe the bullet. Might be a cool thing to have outside the dungeon.
That's true. Yeah.
Can like break through the sand.
Like harpies inhabiting like the meteorite, like top kind of
air
thing.
Stuff. There's good air creatures like harpies. Yeah. Grix are great. We just covered Grix. They killed your special guest Jake's first character.
Yes, they did.
Ate
him up.
So, you know, that is informant. Like, go through the Dungeon Cast episodes and find some monsters you like to put them in if they make sense. You know?
Yeah.
If you want it to feel cohesive like that, you know, we kind of mishmash some things together. But the next thing you have to do is draw this place. Mm-hmm. So get some grid paper or like whatever it is you need to do your thing.
Yeah.
Or like the book says, go get something for free. Kind of chop up, I like the first level of this dungeon. Mm-hmm. I'll use that in this level of my dungeon. And then kind of like chop stuff up and put it together if that's what you want.
Yeah.
And then what you really have to do after that is like basically write what you want each room to be and do.
Yeah.
Traps include like doors, like stuck doors, locked doors, barred doors. God damn, like the team of Super Quest Saga does not do well with doors.
Oh,
that
rough.
Might be all you need.
I think that might be like universal to a D&D experience.
You have anxiety about going through doors.
Yeah,
you don't know what's on the other side. You don't know if the door's a trap. You don't know if it's a mimic.
And then if you roll bad, like the game says you're not supposed to be able to open that door now. So it's like, fuck, man. Like,
yeah, you might not be able to get through a door and there could be cool stuff on the other side, but that's it.
very
and that's
true.
The beauty of the game is like you might not get to see everything. Yeah. That's one of the kind of the pitfalls of dungeon mastering is your players may never go do the thing that you wrote and spend all this time prepping.
It's definitely it's a hazard, and I think it's just
it's part of it
when you gotta what you gotta accept.
But it helps your world feel real to have all this stuff prepped.
Yeah,
and you know you could always like if they miss something and you really want them to see it, you could always do some surgery and cut it out and
reflavor
it else. You know, like. Try to do your best. Don't tell people you're doing that, especially if you're doing it on the fly.
Yeah.
I usually like, oh, that was a cool concept. I'll use it again later.
Yeah.
Like that way my work isn't necessarily wasted. Mm-hmm. I'll just reflavor it to fit like, okay, we didn't make it in that dungeon. Let's put this in my pocket and I'll use it where it seems cool.
Yeah.
You need some stuff like that written down for improv purposes. If your team takes a left when they should have taken a right, you need to know how to deal with that.
Yeah, like what's now going to go in that direction or else you're going to be completely completely thrown off. You're like, oh, shit, what do I do?
Oh, fuck, they're going into the jungle instead of the desert. Yeah. Like, okay, maybe
I did not plan for that.
Yeah, maybe this desert thing I did can be a jungle thing now.
Exactly.
And it can change, oh, it's really cool to do this instead of this.
Yeah.
And, you know, you didn't waste all your time. But, so for this place, I think we're going to have a combination of rooms and tunnels.
I imagine, yeah.
You know, stuff spiraling down, maybe weak floor to like unexpectedly drop a level.
Or like a cave-in kind of thing.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Because this thing has been tunneled out, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then loot and stuff. I mean, there's going to be NPCs in here. Mm-hmm. They'll have loot on them you could take. Mm-hmm. But also, there's something valuable in here. What is it?
Yeah.
Is it just like the some powerful
sort of material.
Metals or something?
Yeah.
Like unique metals in here?
Freaking vibranium.
Yeah. It could be lots of things.
Yeah.
Maybe there's some sort of liquid inside.
Mm.
It's got a liquid center, like a gusher.
Ooh.
And that's what everybody's trying to get.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe like power liquid or whatever, you know, who knows.
That'd be interesting.
But yeah, there are lots of different things you could do. Chutes and ladders is be up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just do your thing. Secret doors, concealed doors, portcullises, darkness and light. Always very important. The lighting in places.
Yeah.
The second you start describing a dark room, your players will inform
vision.
You that they have dark vision, which is regular vision in Dungeons & Dragons.
Yes.
It also details air quality, which is an important thing that you may not think about.
Especially like if you're going down into like
stinky mine.
A mine. Yeah. Yeah.
A bunch of flump farts.
Yes.
Sounds. So I think that's worth reading. A dungeon's enclosed geography helps channel sound. The groaning creak of an opening door can echo down hundreds of feet of passageway.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Louder noises, such as the clanging hammers of a forge or the din of battle, can reverberate through the entire dungeon. Many creatures that live underground use such sounds as a way of locating prey or go on the alert of any sound an adventuring party will make in its intrusion. That's important to know.
Yeah.
In the next section, dungeon hazards, basically filling your stuff up with, you know, we
like traps
we
or
detailed doors and stuff, and that's own special hazard that we talked about. But yeah, like you know, a pressure plate that shoots arrows out of the wall, or like
a freaking Indiana Jones boulder falling and you have to outrun it.
Yeah, like a weight trap, kind of a Team Rocket style hole in the ground.
Oh yes,
that's a tough one,
a
man.
Pitfall.
If you don't have climbing gear, like
you're fucked.
There could be you could limit people based off of like how much good they can climb.
That's true.
But it's got green slime and webs and like all kinds of shit in here. But this is a really comprehensive piece of like tables and literature to help aid you. Like, look how fast we did that.
Yeah,
didn't take much time at all.
And we built a fairly dope dungeon pretty easy.
Yeah. So there you have it. I think if you have not read this book, it's definitely got some useful stuff in here. If you're having writer's block, some type of creative bar on your modeling.
I mean, just run a couple,
break out of it.
Yeah. I feel like run a couple tables, like just build, just keep on building, just let it flow. And even if you don't end up keeping it, like it might trigger, like, you know, it might trigger something. You're like, oh shit, like that was a good idea. Maybe let me just turn it into something else. It doesn't have to be.
Yeah. Like what if we had rolled elves on this dungeon creator chart and we'd be like, oh, that's boring. I wish I rolled beholder.
Yeah. Just
make
it a beholder.
Well, there you go. You don't have to do that.
Yeah.
You can do whatever you want.
Yeah.
So yeah, you just, you know, how people flip a coin and they're like, oh, I want to eat either here or here. Yes. And they flip it and they get it. And they're like, I wish I could roll. I got heads.
Yeah. And then they're like, okay, well, now I know what I want.
Yeah, now you know what you want.
Yeah, so the best.
This can do that for you.
Yeah. Best thing about DMing is it's like Inception. It's just pure creation. Like, it gets to be whatever you want it to be.
Yeah.
And
draw inspiration from where you need it, yeah, or don't.
Yeah.
Just let your influences guide your own brain into doing what you need it to do.
Definitely.
Yeah, I think unless you have any more questions or anything to add, I think we can move into the long rest.
No, let's long rest. I think that was real dope. That was real fun.
Yeah. All right. Let's call it.
Let's go sleepies.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the long rest. This is the part of the show where we get naked and go to bed.
Yeah, just with our slippies on.
Just slippies. Just slippies. These slippies are made to look like I'm not wearing slippies. So.
Slippies and sleepies. That's
so my feet are warm, yes, and toasty, but you don't know that.
You don't know.
You just think I'm Stark. Tony Stark.
Tony Stark naked.
I meant Stark naked.
Yeah.
Tony Stark naked, which is like more rich version of naked, of nudity.
Yes.
It's nudity, but you're wearing an armored suit.
Yeah,
you're naked with inside some of an Iron Man
yes,
suit.
Yeah. Yeah. We got there.
Okay. Let's build a beholder.
Yes.
Fuck. Yeah. I guess we can do whatever we want because we're dungeon masters, right?
Ooh.
So let's just do whatever we want. Let's come up with our own
cool,
unique beam and feature.
Yeah,
we can
yeah,
use inspiration from this episode if we want, like mm-hmm, how we built our sick ass dungeon.
That's very true.
We should name that dungeon.
Fuck.
Let's build a beholder and then we'll talk about naming
yes,
the dungeon.
Yes, yes, yes.
But yeah, what do you want to do? What do you want to do? You got any ideas? We can go with Acerak. Nobody can decide on how to pronounce this dude's name.
The Lich?
Yeah, the Lich on the front of the Dungeon Master's Guide is, yeah. I'm pretty sure that's Acerak. Acerak, whatever, however it is we're supposed to say it.
Yeah, yeah.
Or it could be his homie. I forgot.
Does it shoot? Are you saying
Vecna?
That might be Vecna.
I'm pretty sure
it
this
looks
is
like,
Acerak.
Yeah.
Is this Vecna or Acerak?
You know?
I gotta Google this. Who the fuck is on the front of this book?
Yeah.
Will would have known.
I'm not sure. It looks like Vecna, but also, you know, I only have crit rolls Vecna to draw from, and I don't know.
But who's on the cover of it? Okay, Reddit, here we go.
Are you suggesting...
I love Reddit links. It's Acerak.
Acerak, okay. Are you suggesting a beholder beam that shoots out liches?
No, it can't do that. It can't do that. Like, it could be. It could be.
It just shotguns liches at people.
We can draw inspiration from wherever we like.
It's very true.
I don't know how much you know about Acerak.
Not
it's
anything.
It's like Vecna's apprentice slash his own thing.
Yeah.
They have very similar backstories.
They want to be gods, kind of thing.
I think so. I think Acerak is more about secrets. I think they both are kind of into secrets. Mm. It's been a long time since this episode, actually. Yeah, yeah. They're both undead liches that do cool shit.
Yeah.
I think one of these fools is responsible for Tomb of Horrors. Man, fuck. They're so similar that I can't differentiate
like,
them at
I
this
can't
point
tell
without
them apart.
Like, looking up the lore
yeah,
or going back and listening to the Dungeon Cast. We have episodes on Acerak and Vecna, check it out. But what do we want to do? Maybe that. We don't know enough about this guy, I don't think, off the top of our head. So let's go with whatever we want because we're Dungeon Masters.
Yeah.
If I was going to put a custom beholder beam on it, I would make it breathe dragon fire.
That's dope.
I don't think we've seen that yet. And we're not going to cover a dragon this year. So
no, definitely not.
I don't think so anyway.
I'm down. I don't know.
The
dragon breath beam.
Okay. Then you can do the feature.
Oof. Fuck, it can be anything.
It can be anything.
That's the issue.
Maybe we could use a random table to help us
decide what
the
thing is.
Yeah. I'll flip through until you think of something.
So we're having it breathe dragon fire out of the stock. Man, maybe is it like a chameleon kind of thing? Like, can it change?
Ooh.
Like a mystique kind of thing? Like, maybe
change its appearance?
Yeah, some sort of shape-shifting quality to it. Like, it can camouflage to blend in. It can maybe shape change into
I like
other
where your head's
shit.
At. Let me
you
put,
know what I mean?
I'm going to put one limitation on you.
Please.
The Hobbleman is going to need to draw it.
It's true.
So we need to be specific. And by saying, like, maybe it can change to its location.
Yeah.
This beholder is the Grick Rancher. So
yes.
they're going to be in a cave, a cavern.
Yeah.
I don't know. Is that helping you at all?
Yeah, like maybe they, maybe they're just able to adapt to whatever environment they're like surrounded by. So if they're in a cave, like they get like nocturnal vision, or like, you know, like when something spends a lot of time in a cave or evolves in a cave, like they tend to lose their eyes. They get like better senses everywhere else, kind of thing.
Their skin lightens up.
Yeah,
man, we talk a lot about this on the show.
Like maybe
that's not anyone's fault.
Yeah. Like maybe that's just like maybe it's just adaptable. Like if it's in like the fire plane, like it gets like fire resistance and starts like its skin is red, or like it shoots fucking whatever, like that kind of thing.
So what I'm getting from this is more cowboy.
Oh, because it's even more. Because it's in a ranch. Yeah.
So maybe it looks like the barn it's standing in front of. Or maybe it looks like.
Maybe it just has 2 10-gallon hats instead of one.
What?
It's just even more of a rancher, I guess. I don't know.
Well, that doesn't tie into the chameleon-ness of it. But I like that. It just needs. Pablo Man needs something to
feature.
Show that.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to give him some ideas about, it sounds like it requires, this beholder's feature is going to require a background.
Yeah.
So maybe we let the Hobbleman be creative about that.
It's true.
The backgrounds have been like gradient, because we're not like telling him like, oh, it needs to live in a fucking, in the sky.
Yeah.
So,
do you have any other idea though? Like,
I don't want to get in front of this idea.
Because where my mind was that, you know, like. Dungeon mastering is whatever you want it to be. Be whatever you want it to be. So that's why, like,
understand. I just want to help the Hobbleman execute it.
That's super fair.
So I don't want to change your idea. I just want to give the Hobbleman something to work with.
Yes, I appreciate it.
But I think that what that is to pass the buck.
Yes.
And to say to the Hobbleman, like, you must be the dungeon master of this feature and figure out how to show it.
Hell yeah.
It's very buff.
It is very buff.
It's very buff.
Yeah.
And it can change to look like the wall behind it or whatever. I like it. Yeah. It throws a sword. It calls for Grix.
Yes.
I'm loving this thing so far.
This thing is gnarly.
So we've completed we're responsible for 3 of its 10 features.
We are.
And tentacles.
And so tentacles.
You're a big part of this build.
Hey.
If you want to support us, you can do so by telling somebody about the show, leaving an iTunes review. That is the best way that you can help the show grow.
Yeah,
is
please.
To help us get new listeners. That's really spreading the word about the Dungeon Cast is the name of the game.
Yeah.
If you want to see more of your special guest Jake, you can find him on our Actual Play podcast, Super Quest Saga, where he is our special guest every episode.
Yes, I am.
Do you have anything you want to plug or talk about?
That's the big one. I mean, I also play on a Patreon only game of F-Bats.
Yeah.
That one's also super fun. Superhero based. Flashbang
and the Surgeon.
Yeah.
It's episodes of Batman the Animated Series from the 90s, lifted and pasted onto a Dungeons & Dragons campaign that we play.
Super fun.
It's a really great time. Your special guest Jake and our good friend Steve is on that show. And there's like 2 or 3 seasons of that just in our Patreon. So if you want to go check that out, go to patreon.com/dungeoncast and check it out.
Hell yeah.
I don't know. We haven't run a contest in a while, but if there's books coming out, you can expect us to do that soon.
Mm-hmm.
And to enter our contest, you typically need to be following our social media accounts, which are the Dungeon Cast, both on Instagram and Twitter. Mm. So next episode, I think Will is back. So thank you very much for coming on and supporting.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it was a great time. So we'll have to have you on again. And until then, catch you later.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Bye, everybody.
The Dungeon Cast.
Hello, dear stranger. I'd like to introduce you to something new, or perhaps something very, very old. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine is a horror fantasy medical mystery following the titular monk turned traveling medical investigator. Follow Radolf as he navigates a nightmare world in which viruses are gods and the human race are not their favored children. Steeped in history and an aesthetic that can only be described as a combination of occult academia and laboratory Judaica, the Heresies of Radolf Burntwine have been described as Umberto Eco meets H.P. Lovecraft. For more information, check out the Patreon at thorb.info. But take care, dear stranger, for some truths are best left unknown.